How you doing, everyone? I am Russ Salzberg, along with the one and only Paulie Dotz. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. The number for you to call, as always, is 201-939-4513. And stop everything. The world is coming to an end. Get a load of this. Now, I want you to understand something, folks. Paul, I want you to understand this, too, because I know you had to see your shrink the last couple of days to get your head straightened out. Now, you have a nutjob wackadoo in North Korea wants to blow up the world. You got world leaders in the UN this week, okay? You have, unfortunately, in all seriousness, a terrible, terrible tragedy with hundreds of people dead, over 100 people dead in Mexico because of an earthquake. What is the front page? What the hell is wrong with the Giants? Macadoomsday. What the hell is wrong with the Giants? As long as we have all our priorities in order, we can now move forward with the show.
By the way, how
are we doing today, Paulie?
Did we mention another hurricane just leveled Puerto Rico this morning?
I mean, I have to tell you, you and I have lived through plenty of crises here covering the Giants, but this one is pretty off the charts.
Yeah.
It is pretty off the charts. I mean, listen, nobody has made – I mean, they have played – as I said, they came up with two stinkeroos in their first two games. Having said that, the sky is falling. The world is coming to an end. What the hell is wrong with the Giants?
Oh, boy. You know what, Russ? I will only say this. This is certainly predictable because when you set the bar as high as the Giants did during the offseason, and we were talking about a team that should win the division.
Can I interrupt you for one second?
Yes.
Hold that thought. Not the bar that the Giants set, everybody else set, including fans and media. Continue.
I think the organization did as well.
Yes, no, 100%. That's fine, but the organization wasn't alone.
No.
Fans and media as well.
Everybody. Outside of Las Vegas, which I still thought was underrating the Giants in the offseason, everybody else was saying the Giants are a legitimate conference championship contender and a potential Super Bowl team. That was pretty much acknowledged by anybody who could see talent at the NFL level. Now, when you put the bar this high and then you put two rotten eggs on the field, as the Giants have in the first 2 weeks of the season, what you get is an explosion of fan emotion beyond mammoth proportions, because the anger and the hurt that those fans will feel will be off the charts, because you've promised them a Mercedes-Benz and you've given them a broken-down bicycle. And that's what's happened here.
But you have handled this with amazing grace, shall I say.
My pasta has been hot every night on the dinner table, and that comforts a lot of sore feelings.
No, but really, it has gone. I mean, I hear people talking about – you would think Ben McAdoo, like, killed somebody. Like, it's gotten to the point of, to me – and listen – it's ridiculous. I'm not here to say – I'm not in the leader of the Ben McAdoo Chamber of Commerce. But, you know, the guy was 11-5 in his first season as a head coach. Okay? He was 11-5. He's 0-2, and they played lousy. But, I mean, to talk – you know, here's another thing. I went back. I looked at the season previews in both the Daily News and the New York Post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say they're on my desk at home. Both papers, their expert season preview thing.
Right.
Everybody had – both had them. Giants 10-6.
Double-digit wins.
Double-digit wins.
Which means, by the way, you're going to lose six games.
Yeah, but strong in the playoff. You know, a strong contender to go far. This is not like – it's not just the Giants. As that's why I cut you off before. It's not just the Giants that – expected big things, and quite frankly, the Giants still do expect big mm-hmm. things. There are things that need to be fixed, but I have to tell you, it is now Wednesday. It has not stopped, and you can see by the headlines. It's I'm looking at Mac of Doomsday. It's Mac the Knife. You would think he said things about Eli Manning that like can't be printed. You know, it's just gotten to the point of where I think it's really become silliness.
You know, but one thing I want to say here, Russ, and I think this is very important to mention as I have issues with the cell phone here. I think it's important to mention because I've been getting hammered, and I mean hammered on Twitter, about Coach McAdoo's supposed fallacies, mistakes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I keep hearing, and it gets thrown in my face like every third tweet, oh, he thinks he's Bill Belichick, he's not Bill Belichick. Well, of course he's not Bill Belichick. How many years has Bill Belichick been head coach in the National Football League? Probably about 20, 16, whatever the heck it is. How many years has Ben McAdoo been head coach in the National Football League? 1.5. In fact, not even 1.5.
And Ben McAdoo's first year as a head coach. And I'm not remote, folks. I'm not remote. Don't think I'm going there to compare Ben. Ben is going to be a future Bill Belichick.
Nor am I.
But Ben's first year as a head coach, a lot better than Bill's first year as head coach.
What bothers me, Russ, is that the critics are throwing that up on my Twitter page, and they're forgetting he is only in his second year as a head coach. In fact, if you want to include the coordinator part of it, he's only in his fourth year as a coordinator. The lack of experience when you compare him to a supposed great coach is as wide as the Grand Canyon. This man is going to have to learn a lot as he goes along. And he admitted that after his rookie season as a head coach. Russ, he's in year two. He is going to make mistakes. Okay? That's going to happen. No one is saying that Ben McAdoo is the best coach in the National Football League or that he's about to go to Canton. Nobody is saying that. You must understand, folks, he is going to make mistakes. He is going to make some poor decisions. He is going to make some errors in judgment. That's what happens when you're only 2 years into the job.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Let me add this. Bill Belichick, do you know what his record was in Cleveland when he got his first head coaching job?
I think it was 5-11.
He was about, I'm not talking about first year.
Oh.
His first head coaching job was with the Browns. He was with them for 4 seasons. They made the playoffs once in 4 seasons. He was 4 games within .500.
Bill Belichick doesn't.
But my point is, no matter how great a coach you turn out to be over the course of your career, it is not a given that you're going to be that guy when you take the job. You have to grow. You have to learn. You have to improve. You have to get better. Everybody relax, for God's sakes. It's only the man's second season.
And really, when you look at what has happened, I don't know that Ben McAdoo or anybody else could have. Ben McAdoo didn't drop the ball that Brandon Marshall dropped. Ben McAdoo didn't drop the ball that Evan Engram dropped. Ben McAdoo didn't hold anybody on first and goal at the one. Ben McAdoo, you know, I'm just saying, like, as you say, calm down on the Ben McAdoo thing. Let's not make him look like as if he's about to face a firing squad, because I think really that becomes nonsensical. All right, look, let's open up the phone lines. Peter from Worcester has been hanging on. Pete, you're on with Russ and Paulie here. How you doing today?
I'm doing better than the offensive line is. How are you guys doing? What's up, Paulie Dot?
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, man, right. You know, it's another day. Move on. Philadelphia is ready to play the Giants on Sunday.
Yeah, that D-line is a bunch of animals. I can't imagine what's going to happen to Eli this week. But listen, Paulie, I'm like you. I believe the games are won and lost in the trenches. I know you're a big offensive line, defensive line guy. So
yes.
I came to this country in 86, and you remember how dominant we were up front.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't think this is just an O-line problem. This is a coaching problem. Maybe you guys can understand where I'm coming from a little bit, where these guys are not being coached up front in the offensive side of the ball. I've seen Eli take some bad hits throughout his career, but at 36 years old, I don't know how much longer you could take those kind of hits.
Let me ask you a question. When you're saying they're not being coached up, what do you want the coaches to do with that offensive line? How are they going to make them better? And do you not think that they have been working with Eric Flowers ever since he stepped into the league 3 years ago?
Oh, I'm sure they are. I would imagine that's their job. I would imagine. But maybe it's not just maybe, okay, for example, up here in Massachusetts, a few years ago, the offensive line was giving, you know, was giving them problems. They brought back Dante Scarnecchia. He put those guys right back to where they needed to be. They ended up winning another Super Bowl. I don't know much about the offensive line coach. I'm not going to go ahead and say he's this or he's that.
Coach,
I really
Mike,
don't
Solari,
know much about
Coach Mike Solari's been in this league for the better part of a couple of decades and actually has a very strong resume of getting offensive lines to max out and overachieve. And that's just a fact. That has nothing to do with what's happening today, but his record is very strong.
What do you think, Paulie, then? What do you think? These guys just don't have the talent, or they're just not putting in the work?
Well,
what do you
listen, Peter, and thank you for the call. I don't think there's no doubt in my mind, none whatsoever, that they're putting in the work. The question,
I agree with
the
that.
I mean, I take exception to anybody saying that. The effort is there. Is there a question about the talent? That is a fair thing to bring up. I don't know, because I'm not a talent scout in the NFL. But I would say this, that's something that's Solari's and Ben McAdoo's and everybody and the entire and Jerry Reese and the entire organization's got to figure out. And if not, that's got to get fixed in a hurry. But as far as effort and guys working hard to get better, it drives me crazy. Do you think these guys like waking up every day hearing and reading what's being said about them? Trust me, that cuts deep. Paul, you've been covering it along. That cuts very, very deep.
It does. And if I may just go to the effort point before anybody else calls up and tries to throw that one on the air, let me just point to what Bobby Hart went through when he was injured and got his ankle rolled up on in Dallas. He said it was the fifth or sixth play of the game. He played the entire rest of the way, did not play well by his own admission, but he was on a bad ankle. And he said, what was I going to do? It was opening night. We'll play in Dallas. I can't come out of that game. I got to play. He knows that Wheeler, an undrafted rookie free agent, who barely is green enough to be a piece of lettuce on the supermarket shelf, that's how green he is, you can't throw him into that spot. So Bobby Hart said, I'm going to play that whole game. And he did. And it hurt like heck. And then he was injured during the course of the week, trying to rehab it. They finally said, I believe it was 48 hours before kickoff, we're taking him off the injury report. And Coach McAdoo said, medically, he's been cleared to go, but I got to figure out how effective he's going to be. So what happens the other night against Detroit, Russ? Bobby Hart goes out there, and on the second play from scrimmage, he's getting bull rushed, he tries to plant, and his ankle gives out, and he's hobbling on one leg over to the Giants bench, and he's out for the night. If you're going to tell me that these Giants are not giving effort and they're not trying, then you haven't heard or watched what Bobby Hart tried to do on one leg because he wanted to help his team. Well, and was unable to physically do it. That doesn't show me lack of effort, okay, folks?
Again, if you want to question, you want to be upset about the results, you want to be upset about the performances in the first two games, by all means, go right ahead. And you are justified in your feelings. But to question the effort...
Can't do it.
That's a non-starter here. Cannot question the effort because it's not true.
Again... Think about that entire offseason where these guys really broke it. Now, I'm sorry the results haven't been there.
And that includes Ereck Flowers.
No question. The results have not been there. But I saw this every day with my own eyes when I was here. They broke their butts all offseason to get better. I can't tell you right now why the results aren't there. But I'm going to tell you, they did all the right things to improve.
Victor in Florida. Victor, how are you today? You're on with Russ and Paulie.
Hey, Russ and Paul, how you doing, Goomba?
Hey, Vic.
Listen, I am totally disgusted, okay? Now, I've been a Giants fan for forever. I was at Yankee Stadium when the Giants lost to the Baltimore Colts and Johnny Unitas. But that's okay. What gets me is this. I'm not blaming McAdoo. I'm not blaming the players. I'm not blaming anybody. I blame one person, and that one person is the cause that we don't have a good offensive line. And that person is Jerry Reese. we have two legitimate offensive linemen, Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh. Now, why didn't the hell he go out and got the offensive linemen like he did with the defensive line? That's what burns me up.
Well, Victor,
we just don't have the talent. I don't care how hard they try, Paul. They don't have the talent to be good.
Victor, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate your thoughts. Listen, no one's trying to figure this out more than Jerry Reese. As Jerry said going into the season, we all heard him. He expected, I shouldn't say he expected, I would say he expects them to be better. They had X amount of time and snaps together.
Mm-hmm.
He felt it would work out going into this season. Now, having said that, it certainly has not worked out in the first two games. So that needs to be fixed. I'm sure no one's trying to figure that out more than Jerry. But remember this, when you say, why didn't he go out and get and do what he did on the defensive side of the ball the previous year? Well, you know, it's easy enough said to say, let's go out and spend another $200 million. You know, it just doesn't work that way.
There was no cap room to do that.
No, that's one. And number two, what were the big screams at the end of last season? Do we need the tight end play has to be improved? We were discussing this last week, you and I. They went out and got Rhett Ellison. They drafted Evan Engram. I'm not absolving anybody here because the offensive line play needs to be improved big time. Not a little bit, a lot. But when you say, well, why didn't they just go out and get, that's easier said than done. It's just not done like that all the time. You know, to compare what they did the year before to with the defensive line, bringing in Snacks and bringing in Jackrabbit and OV, it just doesn't work that way. Nick in the Meadowlands. Nick, you're on with Russ and Paulie Dotz. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, you know when you're a big fan and you still feel sick to your stomach. But I'm getting over it because I know we got a big game coming up here. And I just want to say, you know, them booing us, you know, that just hit me right there. You know, home game, everybody's booing. So I got a couple things, guy, and hear me out, you know.
Go ahead.
Paul, I've been optimistic always about Eric Flowers, but I've watched a lot of things on him from college and everything, and I want you guys to bring up his draft profile and look at everything that's said in his strengths, look at the weaknesses. And how many of the strengths carry over to the NFL, you know? And I know he's still young, but he's been in the league for, you know, this is his fourth season. And then you look at the weaknesses, and a lot of those have carried over. And,
well,
you know,
it's his third
season.
Hold on.
High and wide, the hands.
It's his third season. Just make sure you got that right.
And this guy, what's his name, from the Lions, he exposed it and just had a field day. He's slapping his hands away and everything. He doesn't have balance whenever he has to get to the outside rush. He doesn't get there quick enough. There's the footwork part of it. And plus, you know, whenever he tries, he doesn't punch. He just throws his hands. And whenever he does that, his feet aren't flat, you know. That is one big thing. So John Gruden said the other night, and I can't believe I never heard this, you know, because I didn't know that the Giants are the only team that thought he would be a left tackle. Everybody else said guard or right tackle. And then go down at the bottom and look at what Mayock says. Mayock says potential to be a Pro Bowl right tackle. I think if this keeps working, I'm optimistic, guys, you know.
It doesn't sound that way.
And if they got to move him to the right side, it might work because he's a mauler in the run game, and they can work on the pass pro, you know what I mean? But it's not working on the left side. I don't see it. And I think Pugh, he's the only guy that's versatile that could play there right now. And I hope Reese is on the phone and – I'll never say this, but I'll give up a draft pick. Get somebody that is solid enough to hold the left side down because then we can work on the right side.
Nick,
I want him to redeem himself, and I want him to save his career because It's just the technique isn't there, guys. I was optimistic, and it's just I'm watching him more and more, and it's not there.
Nick, thank you.
And I hope it gets there. But
thanks very much for the call,
see.
Nick. Okay, thank you. Everybody's a coach. Everybody's teaching. We know this. You know, I hate to say it, but boy, it sounds like a broken record. Everybody's a coach. Everybody's talking about the technique. I mean, there's no defending his play. Okay, there is no defending his play. But again, it's all what we're on the air like 20 minutes. It's all been about the offensive line. There was nothing else wrong the other day. It was just the offensive line. Were you watching what I was watching? Because I want to know that.
Russ, there are at least two-thirds, if not more, teams in the NFL who were complaining about their offensive line every single day. There is a dearth of quality offensive linemen, especially tackles in the National Football League. And so I think what George Owens always used to say, before you ask the question, you better have the answer. And really what it comes down to, for everybody who wants to talk about what the Giants didn't do to get offensive linemen in the offseason, understand this. They did not have money under the cap to pay for Whitworth or some of these other overpriced, overly expensive offensive linemen. So they were not going to get those guys. So then you say the draft. Well, let me point something to you, folks. I want to make this very, very clear. Do you know right now there are exactly, as of opening day, there were three rookie offensive linemen, three, in the entire NFL who had starting jobs. Ryan Ramczyk, we talked about him possibly as a Giants pick. He's been moved already from left tackle to right tackle with the Saints because he couldn't hack it at left tackle. So that would not have been an answer that right. would have helped them right now. Okay. Number two, of course, is Garrett Bowles, who was drafted by the Broncos and is now seriously injured and is going to miss a lot of time. That would not have been an answer. The other guy is Cam Robinson, who was the starting left tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who was taken in the second round, by the way. If you recall, coming out of the draft, there were a lot of people who thought he'd be a better pro guard than he would be a tackle. And to this point, through two games, he has allowed one sack and been called for one penalty. So I don't necessarily know that he would be better than what the Giants have at the moment. But what I'm trying to tell you is there were no instant just-add-water answers to fix this problem. And most teams in the league have this problem.
Again, you know, it just seems, folks, listen, we're taking your calls, but it just seems we're going around and around and around and around in circles. I mean, how many times? Don't you think that they're working on this to try and get it straightened out? It's easy to say, well, they got to go and do this. Well, who what are they going to do, and who are they bringing in, and what, I mean, you know.
Could we take just one call who wants to talk about Calvin Munson, the undrafted rookie free agent, middle linebacker, who stepped in the other night and had, what, seven tackles and a sack, right? How great a story is that? This kid came out of nowhere to make the team on special teams, has to start on primetime television, and I'll be honest with you, I thought he did a decent job.
Well, you know what? You bring out a point. You know, some of the questions going into this season was the linebacker play. Well, 2 weeks in a row in some negative situations when things went lousy, B.J. Goodson was outstanding in game one. He sits in game two, and you just said Munson comes in and has a good game. Again, folks, no one is denying, no one is disputing, arguing with you that the offensive line, you're not justified in pointing fingers. But, you know, how many times can you say the same thing? And it just doesn't get fixed with a finger snap. 201-939-4513 is the number. Russ Salzburg along with Paulie Dotz, the number one Big Blue supporter. Let's go to Susan in Bohemia. Susan, how are you today?
Good morning, guys. I was going to say good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First,
to
let
you.
Me say I am so glad that you opened the program with what you were saying about putting things in perspective. It's
right.
just a game. I am so happy because, you know, there's so much hate that comes out of these people sometimes. I mean, we got to remember these are still players. I mean, have a little compassion. That was the first thing. So thank you guys for saying that. Now, second, I'm an Eli Manning apologist. I love the guy. But, you know, I want to be realistic. I says, you know, really, how bad is he doing? And one of the criticisms that are usually said about him is is that, well, you know, even though there's a bad O-line, that good quarterbacks rise above the O-line. And I said, all right, well, let me see about this. And I'm looking in the stats and everything. And what I see here, and this, and I'm just taking the major, you know, the highest ranking quarterbacks, okay? But it's true. If they have a bad O-line, they could still rise above it. But there's one thing that they have. They either have a good run or, you know, offensive rushing, or at least mediocre, at least something there, right? Or if they have no run, they usually have then some kind of O-line. Eli is the only one that has both a bad run rushing offense and a bad O-line. The only one that is out of that, that isn't, that has both bad O-line and offensive line is, of course, Aaron Rodgers, excuse me, and, you know, he's like on another level. But everyone else, I went through and I said, you know, Eli is playing against two problems here, and these other ones that they rate so high and say, well, you see, they can do it, that's not fair because they do have a run game. Brady, yes, the O-line is ranked 17th, but their run game is ranked 10th, which is not bad. I mean, at least there's a run game there. Well, Derek Carr, I mean, that both his offensive lines rate 3rd, his running game is, and the running game is worth, is ranked 5 there. Who else?
Susan, let me just interrupt you for a second. I'm not saying you're wrong here. You know, part of me, I'm not sure that the again, you know, as you know, you know they say the, and I've said this several times here, the hip bone's connected to the thigh bone to the knee bone to the ankle bone, all that. I don't know if it's a lack of a run game or, you know, that how much that's connected to the offensive line play. So it's all intertwined. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. And that's got to get straightened out. But the thing is, Rodgers disproves that. Because, you know, you could say, yes, well, you know, the quarterback could make the O-line better or they could make the run better. But here, you know, Rodgers has both a bad O-line and a bad run, and he's still producing really well.
Yeah, but,
you know?
But
so,
Susan, you're making a comparison to a guy who's, you know, and off the charts. Listen, I love – nobody loves Eli more than I do. But in terms of footwork – you know, as they say, as Bill Parcells used to say about people, he's never going to be Baryshnikov. Well. You know, Aaron Rodgers is Baryshnikov. You know, his feet gets him out of a lot of trouble and says a lot of things. So at this stage of the game, at 36, Eli is not turning into, you know, Dancing Harry. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work that way, Susan.
Right, and I understand that. All I'm just saying is that he has, you know, it's not just an O-line he's dealing with. He's dealing with the run game. And all these other top quarterbacks, they do have at least one or the other. And it's just, you know, I guess want more sympathy for you
You make some fair points, Susan, and thank you very much, you know, for the call. But here's another thing. As lousy, and you and I were sitting next to each other watching the game, as lousy as the result and as lousy and the mistakes and everything, there were still opportunities to be right there.
Until that punt return.
With all the crap that went on, if Brandon Marshall catches that ball with 14 minutes left, could be a completely different ball game. Even, and I said this yesterday, Paul, I'm sure you know this, with 4:47, I think it was, to be exact, if Evan Engram, with the score is 24-10, if Evan Engram catches that touchdown pass, it's 24-17, 4:47, you give your defense a chance to make a stop, and then possibly you get a chance for a game-tying touchdown. With all the crap that went on, they still had a chance. So if you want to look at, you know, a positive, they still had a chance. You know, it just
and by the way, too, I don't look at this. They gave up 24 points. I look at this defense and I say, well there was a touchdown on a punt return.
Right.
I look at a field goal that was 56 yards that hit the crossbar and bounced through.
Well, that was the bad omen of all omens.
Oh, my goodness.
When we saw that was it.
You know, and if you want to hold them accountable for the rest of the points, fine. But there's 10 points right there that I cannot really hold them accountable for. So that brings it down to 14. I mean, come on. 14 points. And even if you want to say, well, they gave up the 10-yard completion before the 56-yard field goal. Okay, 17 points. You're going to hold this defense accountable for 17 points and say they're not playing well? This defense is good. Real good.
No. Phil, in North Carolina. Phil, how are we doing this morning?
Yes.
Or I should say this lunchtime.
Yeah, hello. Hello. Thanks for the show. Appreciate it. You give us a great – it's essentially therapy. And don't be – my commentary before we get into specifics is don't be too rough on the fans because it's not their job to have empathy for how hard a player is playing or how hard the general manager is trying to work. They want a good product out there, and we haven't gotten a good product.
You know what,
so
though?
Of course,
and let me be fair.
Critical.
Let me be fair with you. And I absolutely understand that. Fans love their team. Fans are emotionally attached to their team. They work hard for their money. They buy the merchandise. They pay for the tickets. Heck, without the fans loving their teams, there'd be no reason for sportscasters to have a job.
No, nobody's being negative on the fans.
So that's not what we're saying. But what I do believe is that everybody in every job, if they're going to be judged and they're going to be talked about and they're going to be graded and opinions are going to be out there about the job that they do, just like you would want people to know that you're trying hard at your job and it doesn't always work out. And sometimes it's really your fault. Sometimes it's not really your fault. And I think that it is always important, no matter what business anybody is in, whether it's the mailman who's trying to deliver mail in the middle of a hurricane or in the middle of a blizzard or on a beautiful sunny day. The point is, anybody who's being judged, I think it is only fair to look behind the curtain and say, did they give effort or did they not? If they did not, shame on them, and there's no excuse for it, and then they deserve triple the criticism. But if they've put in the hard work, they've done the prescribed things that needed to be done to improve, it should make a difference when the criticism is leveled on them. That is my point. I'm not ripping the fans. I just think that recognition has to be given for what the facts are. And the facts are, these guys did work their butts off to get better, and so far the results have not been there.
You know,
and I agree with
right.
that.
You know, Phil, you made a point. Well, all the fans want, you know, is they want a good team and a good performance. Don't you think nobody wants that more than the players and the organization? Nobody wants that.
Russ, hold on, Russ. And Paul, I agree. You made a good point, and I think there is merit to what you said in terms of the degree of criticism leveled on somebody based on if they're trying hard or not. Correct. I agree with you.
That's all I'm trying to get across.
It's not our job to feel empathy for the organization, you know, if they're trying hard. Our job is to look at the results. And I don't doubt the players are playing hard, and I don't doubt that Jerry Reese is trying hard. But the fact is that we put a lot of gamble on this offensive line without a veteran like swing tackle to back somebody up. There was options there because Wagner on the Lions was out there and he didn't cost an arm and a leg. So that is I count that as basically an F for the organization for not getting one veteran swing tackle. I think, you know, we're so close in other areas, and we've done a good job in other areas, that to leave that to chance is a real oversight. And another thing, let me just say something about Eli. I thought Eli didn't have the greatest first half, but, man, he played his heart out in that second half. And he's getting something rather knocked out of him. You know, some of those shots are ridiculous, and he's trying to make plays. So,
all right, Phil, thanks very much. Thanks very much for the call.
I just want to make something clear, and he brought up Ricky Wagner, so I have to respond. Ricky Wagner's salary cap number this year is $5.9 million. That's not chump change. In fact, the Giants gave a 1 year, $3 million contract to DJ Fluker because he was the only veteran lineman who had put forth any type of resume that they could afford because of the cap.
That's one of the things that people are complaining about, which is a legitimate thing. They want to see DJ, you know.
Well, maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
But by the way, Ricky Wagner's contract, his cap number explodes to $11.9 million in 2019. The next first 2 years, it's 5.9. Then it goes all the way up to 11.9 for each of the next 3 years. This man was paid a pretty high price, a pretty premium price to join the Detroit Lions. And you're going to tell me that you're using him as an example as a swing tackle? No, no. Ricky Wagner got paid as a starting tackle. And if you're going to tell me, well, then why didn't the Giants bring him in to start? I'm going to tell you they didn't have the money to pay him.
Well,
see, that's what we're talking about.
That's where we're going
see,
in circles.
Our job, Russ, as people who spend time researching, understanding, and gaining knowledge about how all of these pieces to the puzzle work, it is our job to tell the fans when they have questions or comments, hey, you know what? You're right. That makes sense. That could have been done fine. You have a very good option, a very logical option, and that was not one that they took, and great. But when you offer an option that was impossible, that did not fit, that could not be done, I also have to come back and tell you, no, your criticism or your alternate option is incorrect, and it was not possible. Therefore, you got to come up with something else if you want to be critical.
No, when the caller said it's not the fan's job to have empathy, well, listen to me. That's fine, but you can't – and no one's saying that you need to feel sorry for the Giants. I'm not saying that. And there are fans who are tremendously – the Giant fans are, I got to tell you, some of the best, most loyal fans in the world. Am I right?
They're awesome.
In sports. They are not good. They are awesome.
I've been around them my whole life. I know.
Tremendous. I can't go – I was telling Dave Deal yesterday. I mean, it started I was running on my run, and guys are honking a horn and people are stopping you. They want to talk about – oh, the Giants. I mean, those are passionate fans. But it works two ways. See, you can't just like the team and when everything is going good and want to abandon them and just kill them when it's not going good. You want to be critical, it's fine. But, I mean, the way some of the comments are made, the vitriol that goes at some people. And I'll say that you would think, again, I'm not defending anything Eric Flowers has done since he's a Giant in terms of his performance. But you would think, God forbid, he killed somebody.
Russ, I'm going to take a stand here on 1 second just for the fans. In 1975, when the Giants played at Shea Stadium, Craig Morton was the starting quarterback. Their leading rusher was a guy named Joe Dawkins, who was a former Denver Bronco. Their leading wide receiver was Walker Gillette, who had been a former Cardinals receiver and was actually very good in his previous career before he got to the Giants. Those were your three best skill position players on offense. That Shea Stadium Giants team was horrible, but they were lovable losers. And that's part of the fans' emotional makeup, Russ. They love lovable losers. If they know the team is not any good, they know there's no talent, and they know they're pretty much going to lose, you know, two-thirds of their games, they can almost accept that and then embrace the lovable loser mentality.
But what has happened, the bar...
The bar is
changed.
Up here.
And once that happens, nothing else becomes acceptable.
Correct. That's correct. This team, by everyone's account, again, outside of Vegas, everybody's account, media, fans, organization, this team's a contender. That's why the lovable loser's tag and emotion will not apply. The fans will automatically be angry, frustrated, upset, and there is nothing warm and fuzzy about a team that was supposed to be here and is playing down here.
No,
nothing.
That is always the case. You know, when there's low expectations and you knock the ball out of the park, well, then it's just great. But when it's high expectations and it's not met, then it becomes the end.
I mean,
of the
world. You knew when Joe Pisarcik was the starting quarterback, they weren't going to be playoff contenders. You knew it, folks.
What was the guy who
Patterson playing Joe? Nice guy. Not a playoff quarterback.
What was Tom Kennedy from the Brooklyn Dodgers in the Continental Football League?
Oh my!
Yeah, oh my! Okay, I think it was Tom Kennedy, was it not? I'm pretty sure. Now I'm dating you.
Nah, no, you're going back.
I'm dating me.
You're going back before me. No, now, Russ.
But he was from the Continental Football League. I think it was Tom Kennedy. Anyway, 201-939-4513. That's for you, the fans, to give us a call, or on Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, how you doing today?
Well, I'm doing as well as I can. Tom Kennedy, 1966.
There you go.
We took him to L.A. to play a game. I think we got beat 56-21.
Something like that.
Something along those lines.
Do you have something in front of you?
If you can find a worse Giant team than 1966, Russ.
Yeah, no.
We're going back to the Gary Wood days right now. Okay? The Gary Wood days, remember? Yeah.
Go ahead, Len.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I go back, Russ, I go back a long way.
Right.
Family's been season ticket holder since 1964.
Right.
It's going on, 52, 53 years. That's consecutive seasons, by the way. That means I traveled to New Haven. I went to Shea.
Right.
We didn't drop the tickets. You know, we stayed with them. Look, I'm frustrated this morning.
Uh-huh.
Twofold. Obviously, I'm frustrated in the team, two losses and so forth. I'm frustrated in the host. What do you want the fans to say? It's a call-in show.
Len.
I mean, what do you want them to say?
Len, how about we talk about the Eagles? There's a game on Sunday. You know, they're going to play. You going to watch?
Yeah, but listen, but you know, I don't want to be smart about this and say defining moment, but it's seriously. If you don't like what the fans are saying, why are you taking calls? Why don't you give us just the philosophy, play it over again, and I'm going to play it over again tonight, too. The last 2 minutes before you took my call, why didn't you do that for 60 minutes? I mean, what do you want from us?
Len, I don't want anything from you, but all I'm saying is stop going around in circles 9 times, and thank you for the call. And when I say stop going around 9 times, how many times can we hear about the offensive line one after another after another? I mean, how about bringing up another point? We get it. We are with you. We say, yes, the offensive line has been a problem. What else do you want? Because if we say enough with this, then it is all the same thing for an hour. The offensive line, the offensive line, the offensive line, the offensive line. How much more do you want to say about it? Then you got people calling up saying, well, this technique, like, then everybody's a coach. You know, it doesn't work that way. I mean, we want the passion from the fans. We want all that. We invite your calls. How many times during the show do I announce 201-939-4513? We tweet it. I put it on Facebook. Let's call. But do me a favor. If your guys are watching or ladies are watching the show and you're calling us, and one guy gets up and says, Eric Flowers, then the next guy gets up and says, Eric Flowers, then the next guy gets up and says, hello? It's not the Eric Flowers show. It's the Big Blue Kickoff show.
You know what's kind of weird about all this? I don't remember getting one tweet the last 3 days or hearing one phone call this morning about the 3 missed tackles on the punt return that iced the game. The punt return was the final nail in that coffin that iced
the
game.
How about that? That hasn't been mentioned in 2 days. It wasn't mentioned yesterday. Listen.
Teams deserves their share of the beef too, don't they?
Not one person today has brought up Brandon Marshall, Evan Engram.
Well, you have.
No. Yeah, but I'm saying, you know,
There were enough mistakes to go around.
When Ben McAdoo says that, he's not just deflecting. There's enough mistakes to go around. But this becomes the same thing. The same thing. And that doesn't go anyplace. Charles in New Mexico. Charles, how you doing today?
Gentlemen, how are you this morning?
What's Charles, up? How are you? And by the way, can I tell you before you start that Olivier Vernon actually played a heck of a good game? By the way.
He did. And you know what else? I just want to say this. You know, I listen every morning, Paul. You know, here in New Mexico, it's tough. Diehard Giant fan my whole life.
Yeah.
And I can't take the losing anymore. I really can't. But Munson, you brought up Munson. Let me tell you, being out here in Mountain West territory, the kid's a hustler.
He is.
I think he played pretty well. I think he blew one coverage when the back came out of the backfield
on
a crossing pattern.
Yeah, early in the game he had one. That was tough.
About the punt return, I still think Harris is being held on the punt return. He was tackled on that punt return, thrown to the ground. That's not a block. That's a hold.
I'll go back and take a look at that. I'll tell you, by the way, too, I thought JPP was actually hog-tied around the neck on the touchdown pass that Stafford threw in the right corner of the end zone. And, you know, again, those things are going to happen. You're not going to see every call. The referees are not going to throw every flag. But imagine if the Lions had to lose that touchdown off the board and gone back 10 yards for holding on JPP.
Because
there was an arm right around his neck.
Should have caught that pass.
Whatever.
That was a beautiful pass by Eli. Everybody on Twitter, Facebook, ripped Eli.
Charlie.
He's got the stats. He puts the ball in their hands. Jeremy Shockey would have never dropped that touchdown pass.
Well, but no.
Well, he had a few drops in his time, too.
Charlie, let's be fair. Evan Engram, it was his first year. Yes, he should have caught the ball. And you know what? If you're in that lineup, you're supposed to make the play. But that's another point, and I'm glad you brought it up. How great a play was that on Eli's part to get that ball off, to put it where he put it?
Yeah, everybody wants to talk about the offensive line and bash Eli. The guy stays in there. He takes brutal hits. He gets the ball. Sometimes he makes a mistake. You know, look at his stats for the season. They're not that bad. You know, in both the games, he's done all right. The receivers haven't done their job. Your guys are absolutely right.
Eli, I mean, considering what he's had to work with, Eli's actually played pretty well in these first two games. And, you know, Russ mentioned Engram getting the ball knocked out of his hands at the goal line with about 4.5 minutes to go. What a great throw that was.
That's the play I'm talking about.
That's a great throw.
That was the way he was rolling, the way he put that up there. Like,
I thought you were talking about the Marshall play, which was also a great throw.
No,
also a great
about
throw.
The Engram play.
You know, both throws were great.
Both those throws were like the throw to Mario Manningham in the Super Bowl. No, he put it right
great
there.
Throws.
Two.
Yeah, great throw. Great throws. Throw. Just real quick, Paul, how did you grade Munson in his first game? And is Goodson coming back this week? Are we getting Jenkins back? We're playing the Eagles. It's definitely a must-win. I hope McAdoo calls a little bit of better plays or maybe finally gives up the play calling to somebody else. But what do you think? Is Goodson coming back and Jenkins?
I thought that Munson, I said he did good. He did well. I'd give him a B if you wanted to put a letter grade on it. Goodson, we do not know. His lower shins were hurting him at the end of last week enough that he could not play in the game. We hope to find out some more today. I'm sure they'll continue to do whatever rehab they've got to do to get him in there, because certainly you want him in there. I don't think there's any question that Goodson's the real deal. It really appears to be that way. Jenkins was a surprise because he was out before the game in warm-ups, and he was running around, and I thought that looked like he was going to go, and then it turned out he was scratched. So I'm also perplexed as to why that did not work out for the Giants, and you're right. They certainly need him because the Eagles have weapons. Wentz can throw it. He can throw it on the run. He's got a quick release. He will throw receivers open. He will throw into tight spots. This is a game you want Jackrabbit in. You really do,
yes,
if he can go.
I listen, for Jackrabbit not to be, Charles, in that game last week, for him not to be in.
He had to be hurt because he's a baller.
He had to be hurt.
Is he a baller?
Oh, yeah, he's a baller. And by the way, Ross Cockrell actually did a pretty good job the other night. He really did. He was involved in a number of plays, and he was right there around the ball, right with the receiver. For a guy who'd only been here for a couple of weeks, I thought he was solid.
You know, and here's another play on a touchdown. Charles, Eli Apple was running toe-to-toe.
He was. Ball was underthrown.
And all he had to do was turn around.
Ball was underthrown.
Yeah, all he had to do was turn around. You guys are saying stuff. My wife and my kids get crazy because I yell at the screen so much. You know, turn around. I appreciate the phone call. Hopefully we pull it together this weekend. You guys have a great day. Thank you for answering my questions. It's a great show.
All right,
and stop. Don't worry about Eli. Eli's the man, and nobody mentioned this either. He just tied Elway for sixth all-time on the passing leaders.
Charles, let me ask you a question. How out in New Mexico, or are you a transplanted New Mexican? How did you become such a big Blue fan?
I was born and raised in Brooklyn. My dad's side of the family were big Yankee and Giant fans. My mom's side of the family were Mets and Jets.
Wait a minute.
So I went with Big Blue since I was about 4 years old. I can remember.
Where in Brooklyn?
You guys mentioned 66, I mean, but I was born in that year, so I don't remember that.
Where in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn, I grew up on McKinley Avenue and Fulton Street.
Oh, boy. All right.
Yeah. So I've been transplanted here forever. My four kids, thank God they don't have the passion and the sickness that I do for the Giants, but they all wear their hats on Sunday and they get with me and we have a good time.
All right, Charlie. Listen, thank you for the call.
Appreciate it. Call again.
Go Big Blue on Sunday. Thank you very much.
Wow.
When you hear people coming from, you know, like far off places, I always wonder how they became such a fan.
Well, and honestly, that's the great thing about this program, because it is on the web, Ross.
Yeah,
you know,
it's great.
You don't have the limitations of the radio signal. You know, anybody around the entire world can click on their computer and they can be a part of it.
Yeah, listen, folks, we encourage all of you guys to call. You're all passionate, tremendous. We love it. All we're suggesting is just let's not beat the same issue into the ground. There's only so much you can go around and around and around and around and around with the same issue.
I just got a tweet from the moon. The man in the moon is unhappy with the Giants' offensive line.
There you go. Well, somebody is unhappy. Boy, that's news. Somebody's unhappy with the offensive line. Where the hell did that come from? I can't figure it out.
Oh.
Let's go down to Orlando and check in with Kevin. Kevin, you're on Big Blue Kickoff with Russ and Paulie Dots. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how you guys doing?
How you doing?
All right. I normally never have to call because you guys always cover everything I want to know. But I just want to say that I was very pleased with a lot of the defensive players, especially with our middle linebacker. He was an undrafted rookie. He came in, had an awesome game, I think.
He did all right.
We were missing one of our best corners in Jack Rabbit, mm-hmm. and we still had a decent game. I just wish everybody would just come down to earth and just let everything go. We have a big game coming this week. It would mean nothing more to me than going into Philly and scoring 30 points on them. Let's put this game in the past and worry about this game coming. And, Paulie, I like to say, man, I'm a big fan of yours. I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you.
I get all my knowledge from you. You're the best.
Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for the call, Kev. Appreciate it very much. Paulie Dott certainly is the man.
The big
blue insider.
Scoring 30 on the Eagles is a lot to ask, especially the way they're struggling right now. But I will say this. If you want to look at this matchup, the Eagles are a very top-heavy defense. Their front line, they rotate guys.
Well,
they play that wide nine defense.
That's what.
And they rotate guys, and they all are foaming at the mouth,
yeah.
Very energetic. They're all coming forward, and they all get after the quarterback. So, of course, being that the Giants' Achilles heel is the offensive line right now,
everybody
that's a bad matchup.
100%.
Because they're foaming at the mouth right now. The Eagles' defensive line is foaming at the mouth. Now, here's the other part to it, though.
And the Giants know that they're foaming.
No question. Their linebackers, they're not a whole lot better than the Giants' linebackers. They're an okay bunch. Okay, there's no superstars there, to be perfectly honest. I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to say, well, look at this. Kendricks is just terrific. He goes sideline to side. Yeah, Kendricks plays well in space. He does not do very well when you get a hat on him and tie him up in traffic. Okay? He's a rover in space and does well tracking people down, but not if you run at him and bully him. So let me throw that to you. Three of their top six defensive backs are injured and probably will not play in the game. So their secondary is very weak and suspect. So that's two-thirds of their defense, which you should be able to do business against if, Russ, you can at least keep Eli alive.
Well, we've said that all – not all season. It's just two games. I mean, you've said that –
Well, to be honest, it was the
years,
same way against Dallas.
It
wasn't that way against Dallas because Dallas, again, I just think that they played way over their heads that night because they were just so much after revenge with the Giants. But last week against Detroit, it's a similar situation as to the Eagles, except that Philly's defensive line is much more talented than Detroit's. But Detroit's strength of their D was in their D line.
Yeah.
It was not in their back seven. And the Giants, unfortunately, did not take advantage of that. And now it becomes that much harder against a very rabid Eagles defensive line. Anyway, that's a quick scouting thumbnail report on what to expect from Philly's D.
Jacob in Jacksonville. Jake, how you doing today?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Hi.
First, I just want to say I appreciate what you guys are doing. I would be losing my mind if I had to deal with some of these fans you guys have to talk to, so thanks.
Okay.
And I was going to get you already talked about the Eagles' defense. So I was going to ask about that, so maybe about the offense.
Sure.
Eagles' offense and what we can expect, because they do have a couple new pieces, and Nelson Aguilar is playing a little better than last
sure.
year, so maybe you can talk about that.
Quick Thanks, thumbnail in scouting the Eagles.
Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it.
Wentz, I mentioned before, Wentz releases the ball very quickly. He throws to get receivers open. In other words, he will not wait for the receivers to get open and then throw to the spots. He will throw them open by throwing into traffic to make sure that they go get it. His receivers do have the ability to go get it. He has a lot of confidence in them, and they do a good job of going to get the ball at its point. He's got mobility, okay, and he can throw on the run. But the danger for Wentz is that he does throw into traffic a little too much. He will gamble and take some chances. And if you are wise enough and sticky enough in the back seven, you can pick him off. That's the good news. The other good news is only his second year in the league, you can disguise coverages against him. And you can fool him into making a bad decision and a bad throw. He does not have much of a running game to use, Russ. In that regard, they're like the Giants. They don't have much of a running game at all.
Let me say this, though. You happen to be right about their lack of running game. However, for a big man, Wentz can run.
Oh, yeah, he can. There's no question.
I mean, he can.
No question.
I mean,
he's
mobile. Really can run. You know, Ben Roethlisberger extends plays, what I think, based on his strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just a big, strong guy and nimble enough to move around. But Wentz, I mean, I watched him last week. He can tuck the ball under when he's getting in trouble and, you know, go, daddy, go. I mean, he can really, you know. Listen, that's certainly a weapon, and that's something that we saw that with – I'm not saying he's Matt Stafford.
Right.
But
Stafford's a poor man's Rodgers.
Well, I got to tell you
he looked real good the other night.
His footwork the other night was just tremendous.
All right, to finish up the scouting report, big matchup. If Jenkins goes, he goes up against Alshon Jeffrey. That is a huge matchup for the Giants because – Jeffrey has the size, the frame, the speed, the elusiveness. He's a guy who Wentz really trusts to get the ball to. Jenkins can certainly plaster him if he's playing in the game. I also want to mention one other thing. Isaac, and it's a tough name, it's Seumalo. He's the left guard. They gave up 6 sacks last week, okay? He was in on responsibilities for 4 of the 6 sacks they gave up because every time the Chiefs set more than a 4-man rush, they got pressure on Wentz. Every time they blitzed, if they sent 5 or 6 guys, they busted through. The Eagles are great if you're only going to send 4. You send 4, they can pass protect all day. Not a problem. But you start sending that 5th and 6th guy, all of a sudden they open up like a sieve. So if I'm Spags, I'm thinking of as many exotic multiple-look blitz packages as I can find because that's the way to short-circuit the Philly offense.
All right. Listen, we just have a couple of quick minutes here, Paul.
I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk Eagles.
So put on your Karnak, the Magnificent cap, and if you – it's Wednesday, we haven't heard anything yet. Do you see major changes, in gut feeling major changes coming up in the lineup?
You know what, Russ? We got to find out about the injury report first before we do anything else. There are too many things that are unknown between Jenkins, Goodson, Bobby Hart – his ankle did not look good the other night.
I'm not expecting to see him.
I would not think so, but again, we got to wait for the injury report. But that matters in terms of what your options are to shuffle the line. We got to find out if DJ Fluker's healthy. Remember, he was active the other day, didn't play, but he would come off a week of a sore leg. We got to find that out.
Yeah. Listen, again, fans, we encourage, we want you to call. We love the fact
that's why the show's here.
We love that you're passionate. All I'm saying is, how many times can you say the same thing over and over and over again? Then it just becomes redundant. We don't want that discussion to be. We know the O-line has been a problem. Let's hope it will not remain a problem. That's all we're saying. But as you know, McAdoo says, it's not just – believe me, there's plenty of blame to go around in these first two games. Let's hope there's no blame coming up in Game 3 because it is a crisis situation. Giants need this one. For Paulie Dotz, the one and only Paul Dottino, I'm Russ Salzberg. Thanks for being part of Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. The number, as always, mark it down, 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. We'll see you next time.